This is Thrive Perspectives, an ever-growing discussion about the issues and ideas that shape our lives with your guide, Dr. Matthew Jacoby.
This is Stu, your host, and we continue our discussion on the issues that shape our lives. We live in a world that's increasingly cost-averse. We want convenience, comfort, and the lowest possible price. And that mindset doesn't stay on the shopping trolley. It shapes the way we think about relationships, commitments, and even faith. But Jesus never offered a low-cost version of discipleship. Jesus calls us to be holy, to be set apart. Holiness means we won't always fit neatly into the expectations of the crowd, and that set-apart life can feel expensive when belonging is the currency of our age. So let's join Pastor Matt and Connell as we ask how we can live set apart in a culture where the highest good is often staying accepted, staying comfortable, and staying unbothered. The question isn't whether following Jesus will cost you, but what you're willing to pay. Hi Matt, Connell, good to be in the studio as we continue Thrive Perspectives. As we look at the issues that shape our lives, and we thought in this episode we'd pick up a little bit on where we left off from the last episode, where we talked about conformity in the narrow way and the broad way, and to sort of land it a bit closer to home and actually look at specific things and specific ways in which culture, which is so powerful, this cultural pressure on us to be conforming is so strong. I think we underestimate that and how easily it can make us drift away from those core values.
Which is a big biblical theme. And this is, if you read through the story of the Old Testament, isn't this the big theme of the people going into the land? And, you know, I've just been reading through Deuteronomy for our sister podcast, Thrive Deeper, and the continual exhortations not to follow the ways of the nations around you and not to conform to the, as you know, Paul says, do not be conformed to the pattern of this world.
Yes.
And then, of course, they do. And as readers now, we say, oh, no, what are you doing?
What's wrong with you?
Like, what's wrong with you? That's so obvious. Mm. You know, like, it's so obvious that you're blending into the pattern of this world. But that's, of course, because we're not enticed by those things in that culture at that time, right? Mm. But the danger is equally as big now.
But what they've seen, you know, God walking with them out of Egypt and so on. And then as soon as Moses leaves them, they turn to a golden and calf. It's like, why would you do that when you've just seen all of those things? Why would you turn to a golden?
And yet, what are our golden calfs today?
That's right. Like, and so it's, you know, because we don't understand how deeply the enticements of our culture actually are. They're so inbuilt within us. And I think this is where, as it says in Proverbs, and actually says this twice, it's one of the only Proverbs that's repeated twice, is Proverbs 14:12. Mm. There is a way that seems right to a man, but its end is the way of death. And we want to really put the emphasis, there is always going to be a way of the world that is culturally shaped, that adapts to human nature at any given point, that is in the air that we breathe, that essentially is what Jesus refers to as, that we looked at this in the last episode, the broad way. There's always going to be a broad way, and the current of the broad way is not just going to be an external current. There's always going to be something in it that appeals to us and that threatens to draw us, you know, into itself. And the whole point of the concern in the Old Testament is this concern that God's people need to be in the world and not of the world. In other words, they need to be holy, right? They need to be different, so that when people experience the community, and I don't want to just individual, it is at an individual level, but it's also on a communal level, because part of what distinguishes us is that we, particularly in our cultures, that we don't live individualistic lives. Mm. So, you know, when people look at the Christian community, as when the idea back then was, when people experienced God's people, Israel, there would be a sense of difference.
Yes.
You know, there's...
What is it about you?
Holiness is the principle there, right? It's distinctness, right? Mm. But in order to attain that, we actually really need to take very seriously how strong the current the other way is. And I think that's important for us because we're more enmeshed in the world now. I mean, at least they in a sense lived in an isolated enclave, right? We're not actually meant to live in an isolated enclave. We're meant to live in the world, and we have a mission in the world to witness to a completely different way of living.
Yeah.
And it's pointless if we just exhibit, you know, and I'm not talking about external, you know, external differences. And I think this is where we can go wrong, because there is a sense in which we need to be the same. I'm going to say that very cautiously, in order that people experience a difference, right? So we speak the same language, we adopt the same cultural idiom, right? Because we don't want to be unnecessarily unintelligible or offensive, right? This is, you know, a standard kind of aspect of cross-cultural missions.
We're just trying to limit obstacles.
Yeah, you learn the culture so that you're not unnecessarily offending people by, you know, cultural differences. I mean, you look at the example of Paul on his missions in the Book of Acts, and he went again and again out of his way not to offend the cultural sensibilities of people so that they could experience the distinct call of Christ, you know, so... which is why, you know, as a church, we use the cultural forms of our time. You know, we speak the language of our time, the way that we illustrate things, the musical idiom, all of these things, again, not so that we blend in, but actually so that people can experience the difference.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's the way that I would put it, is that we want to have an on-ramp that is an ascending on-ramp.
Yes.
You know what I mean? So that as people, you know, when they first turn up, it's like, oh, these are normal people like me. But as they move in, the on-ramp is an ascending on-ramp, right? It's like, oh, I'm starting to, the more I'm amongst these people, the more I see there's a difference. And actually, I think it's right that it feels like a costly difference. The experience that people have, it must feel discontinuous with a worldly way of living, you know, because what we're offered in the gospel is a new heart, right? Ezekiel 36, I will give you a new heart and put a new spirit in you. So it's not just more of the old, and we need to be very conscious of this in a culture that is a market-driven culture. We would describe ourselves a consumer culture, right? So in this consumer culture, we need to be very careful that we're not just pandering to the consumer, because that's, you know, I mean, in our market-driven culture, you create products for needs, and, you know.
This is the problem, though. Like what we're saying here, in a market-driven culture, you've got to attract people.
Yeah.
You've got to attract the market. So to some extent, maybe it's a symptom of church culture, at least over the last 10 years, we've had a sense of being attractive to attract people into the doors. And obviously the Sunday service is like a kind of a gateway.
Yeah, it's a gateway.
We position service often as a gateway to make it easy enough for people to be able to participate and walk through the doors and not be turned
totally
uncomfortable.
It's the bottom of the ramp.
It's like, you know, Sunday service I would describe as where we get together as a family to remind ourselves what we're all about, to point in the same direction, and we invite others to it.
Yes.
You know what I mean? It's an open meal. But in that context, we want people to experience, yes, these are people like me, and yet there's something really different that to experience difference as well.
But we can get it wrong, I think. Where do we set the line between what is necessary obstacles to remove in order to attract people?
Yeah,
to making sure the cost is still, I guess, there's an on-ramp.
Yeah.
We've got to get people on the on-ramp, and sometimes we don't do a very good job of even building the on-ramp. But I think sometimes we actually create an obstacle for them to then comprehend the cost.
Like it's cheap, like it costs nothing.
Yeah,
it's easy.
We've almost positioned the message of Christianity of Jesus and created a version that is kind of quite easy to market.
It's the one that becomes
an obstacle.
Yeah, it's the one that it does, because it's not the real thing. We essentially create a form of the Christian faith that is an accessory, because we're all about accessories. You know, we decide how we want to live, and then, you know, the market provides us with the various accessories that are going to make us happy or add value to our lives. And in that context, it's very tempting to provide you know, as a church to be a purveyor of sort of religious goods and services that add value, that essentially, you know, that are going to add what you're missing in your pursuit of happiness. And then we're just more of the same. And then here's the thing, when it's not really, when people are thinking, well, I can get that in a whole lot of other ways and people don't respond, I feel like then the temptation is to put ourselves on sale, like, you know, to lower the cost so much that, well, we've got to create a sale, we've got to make this as cheap as possible. You don't have to, you know, like nothing is expected of you. And I mean, sure, you know, as I often say, in fact, you should not change anything when to come to Jesus. You don't have to change anything, but you come knowing that everything is going to change, right? Everything. It's like Jesus said, unless a person gives up everything that they have, they cannot be my disciple. Mm. Talk about a cost, right?
And I think your ramp analogy works really well there, because as you enter the ramp, it's close to the ground where you start, but as you go up, it gets further away and it requires more of you. And I think we live in a society that's cost averse. We want to have everything at the least possible cost. And so even from within the church, we, even at a leadership level, sometimes we can look at how do we make it as easy as possible and as comfortable as possible. Yeah. And how do we,
what's the least I can do to still be involved? I'll just be on like one, you know,
once
like,
every 8 weeks or something like that on the roster. But I'm thinking even as a leadership, it becomes more important that there's coffee afterwards or tea afterwards, because people will get upset if there isn't. And it's like, now that's nice, but it should never be the leading edge in my opinion. You know, the leading edge should be, we need to recognize certainly those, not necessarily new people who are at the ground level stepping onto the ramp, but the people that are up the ramp, that's where there needs to be a cost. And we need to recognize there is going to be a cost. And actually, if there isn't, if it's not costing you anything, if it's just when it's convenient, if there isn't a level of sacrifice, then I think we've got to really ask ourselves, how much am I on the narrow road?
Because it's easy to talk about it too as a concept. We'd bring people in to lead them somewhere up the ramp to understand the cost and to enter into a relationship with Jesus. And you've got to look at it and go, but how successfully are we doing that? But we can't really measure it by numbers, because many people came to hear Jesus's message and then many turned away.
Yeah.
So I'm not even sure how you define success. But I do think for a lot of Christians, the only connection with church is the Sunday service. And so if the Sunday service is designed to be relatively easy to be part of, then they kind of remain at that level. There's not the ramp necessarily. Mm. And so you end up with a whole church of people that are develop that sense of, this is what it means to be part of a church, is to come to church on a Sunday, and then I've kind of expected to be a certain way in order to make me happy to be in this church. You know, it's like maybe we set it up that it's hard to progress people on beyond that point. And I'm not sure that
I think the cost needs to be upfront, actually. Yes. And I've been more and more conscious of this experience I've had. You know, I think it was in a market in Turkey or something. And when I, you know, a guy comes in and says he's going to give me something. I'll give you, you know, you're from, I'll give you something for your, like, and he starts making something. And then gradually it's like,
that'll be 10 euros.
Yeah, yeah. And gradually the cost went up and up and up and up, right? And it was a bit bait and switch. Yes. You know, he was bait and switching me. And I think we need to be careful of bait and switch. I just think we should be upfront about the cost, because I actually think we depreciate the value of what we have if right from the front it feels like cheap and easy. And you know, if I walk past your average sort of car dealership, you know, I probably won't even have a look, right? But if I walk past
a Lamborghini,
like I'll probably. You know, I'm probably going to stop and look and, you know, it, just the concept of something costing that much, you know, it's like, wow, this must be, you just think this must be something special, right? Yeah. Like,
because we equate value to cost.
Yeah.
So if it costs nothing, well, we don't value it much.
Yeah. And it's, you know, so we have free access, but we have free access to a costly life. Let's be clear, you know, on that.
And well, it's free because of God's incredible cost.
Yeah. But unfortunately, the free bit tends to equate to then cheapening it. Like it free means, of course, this is a kind of a concept of cheap grace that was famously criticized by Dietrich Bonhoeffer in his book, The Cost of Discipleship. And brilliant book. And, you know, he talks about cheap grace, how we can, because we have free access through Jesus Christ, we can then just cheapen the, you know, cheapen grace. Like nothing is required of you. You can just come as you are and stay as you are. Now, sure, come as you are, but the fact is, again, it's life for life deal here. Yeah. Jesus freely gives his life for you so that you can cash in your old life for a new life. I mean, that's even saying that is a little, is kind of cheapening, but it is actually about leaving something behind and taking up something new.
I think your comment about the cost in how as churches, sometimes we can maybe lower the bar and then it makes it difficult. I think there's two sides to that. I think as Christians, and this obviously with new Christians, it starts with a good start for those new Christians, is understand that living things grow. So there's an expectation that we've got to grow. I think we've got to put that expectation on ourselves. How am I growing this week compared to last week or this year compared to last year? How am I growing? And I think the church's responsibility is to make sure there are pathways for people to step onto to grow. We can't make people grow,
I think, as the church,
but we do have a responsibility to create pathways where people can take a step to go deeper in their faith.
Yeah.
And I think then there needs to be the expectation that people are availing themselves of that. And part of that is serving. You know, this is a church of, the church isn't a place you go to. It's something you're part of. Again, I think this is where presence over platform, you know, the whole idea of, no, we're for people and with people. We're helping each other. We're not, there's not a group up the top to do all the work to help everyone, but we're all leaning in here. And I think that's the thing that shines to people coming from the outside.
Yeah.
I think it's that sense
of... It's seeing a whole lot of people invest.
Yes.
A lot. And it's like, wow, this...
This must mean a lot to you.
Yeah, this must mean a lot. And this of course, was the power. I mean, this is the secret to the power of the early church, is in times of persecution, they were prepared to give their lives before deny their faith. And that said, you know, and the thing is, it's like God allowed that. And you know, why would God allow that kind of persecution? Why would God allow his people to suffer so much? Because it demonstrated the worth. I mean, the reason why, as the famous saying goes, the blood of the martyrs was the seed of the church, because it pointed to the supreme value of this pathway, that it's worth everything that we have to give for it. And it's interesting, in those times, when I read about the early church, I sometimes find myself shocked by how actually strict it was. I mean, if you're not really serious about it, and if I mean, very welcoming and open, and but if you're not serious about it, see you later. I mean, you know, it's like I believe the church is something like is a recovery community for the human condition, right? And I, in some ways, I sort of model it off the Drug and Alcohol Rehabilitation Center that we're partnered with as a church, Foundation 61. And, you know, if someone turns up at Foundation 61 and says, well, I'll come here, but as long as I still get to observe all of my, you know, continue my old lifestyle. See you later. You know what I mean? Yeah. Like, you don't, and you know, and in fact, they're very strict. If you, you know, basically if you slip back into it, or if you smuggle, you know, contraband in, or so, it's like, see you later.
That's because it's not only about that person.
Yeah,
but it's about the influence of that person on everyone else. And I think that's the what we're really trying to speak into here, is the cultural pull, or the crowd pull, I guess.
Yeah.
You know, there's a huge pressure, much more than I think most of us would recognize and accept. And that pressure is to go along, but often it's not just going along. It's actually where we start to reinterpret our own reality so that our outward kind of actions begin to match what we believe inside. And we start to rethink about what we thought we believed in the terms of what it seems that everyone else is believing.
But I sort of think maybe the ramp analogy falls down a little bit in my mind, because I think we try to make that journey from not having made that decision yet to follow Jesus. And we try to make it such a smooth, gradual transition into it by, you know, taking people on different pathways and teaching them and leading them to a point over time where they're ready to make that decision. Maybe the decision, though, that's got to be made is more abrupt.
Oh, but the point of that is that you've got to know what you're dealing with. And this, you know, there's a element of discipleship that comes before people make a decision. Mm. And I mean, at its strictest in the early church, you see that there was a long process that they went through before they formalized their decision in baptism. I mean, they really got to know what does this actually involve? Like, they, you know, because they wanted to ensure it wasn't that they were expecting people to have it all together,
no.
You know, so it was definitely still belonged to the early stages. But there's a sense of we do need to give people time because it's such a worldview difference. They need time to journey with us and to understand it and to learn and to read and to actually understand because it's different.
But I'm thinking
people need to be able to grasp
it's
the difference.
It's time. I get that. Maybe the whole thing, like if you take baptism, for example, to me, it's like more of a step. You can come in and you can be part of learning and seeing what it's about and so on. But it's not actually a ramp, a little gradual ramp. It actually is a point where there is a step to take.
Like, oh, yeah. By ramp, it's not like a, it's not, that doesn't
yeah,
mean
I know,
it's
yeah.
a smooth transition into but, the faith. There's, but it's like a ramp of understanding. And then you sort of kind of get to the top and you realize there's actually a leap into another completely different kind of life.
But maybe it's not too, maybe the ramp at that part isn't too long. That's what I'm saying. You said before, you want to.
Hey, I like my ramp analogy.
It's falling apart.
Let me share. I mean, Jesus' discipleship method was come see. That was the first thing. Come and observe. See what the difference is here. Then it's like, okay, now follow me.
Yeah, I think that's an appropriate model because you do see that. Look, people had time to observe Jesus. They listened to his teaching.
And then he went to follow me and establish these basic habits. And then he went be with me. You know, it's like deploy and continue to grow in the faith. And then ultimately it's like remain with me and get out there and tell everybody else about it and draw other people in. And I think that so there is an intentionality around the way that ramp, for want of a better word, even if it has steps and it works. But there is an element of come see first. And I think that's what we're trying to do. Two things in our church services. I think we're trying to continue to create the community for existing believers and Christians who want to come and continue to grow. We're trying to do that to some degree in a Sunday service, but not primarily, I would suggest. But we're also trying to say, come and see what it's like to be part of this community, to be part of Jesus's community here. Yeah.
Yeah, that's right.
But you said before you want to be more upfront about the cost because always like that whole bait and switch thing is a real problem. Like we try to make it out as if it's one thing. And then as you get further and further along the road, you gradually get shown what it's really about. And then the cost comes out. Mm. And you touched on it before. You said you want to make the cost more upfront. And maybe that's key to it. That's where I kind of see more of a step. It's like we're very upfront about the cost, but you're allowed to be just part of it and observe and part of, you know, hang around and listen and see what it's about. But really, from the moment that you come in, we don't hide the cost.
Well, I think a lot of people can see the cost because, and this is what sometimes I think
draws
people.
Well, they should see the, I mean, hopefully they see it.
Because they can see people serving and volunteers. Yeah. And I think there's an element of that. But I think you don't just add God on, you know.
Yeah.
It's actually exchange, which you said just a little earlier. It's like your life, you're giving over. Now, initially that takes some time to figure out, well, what does that actually mean for them?
Yeah, I mean, but that is actually large. I mean, this is why we're having this conversation because that I've been much more emphatic about that.
Yes,
probably in the last while because I have realized that I actually need to be clear about what the gospel is actually offering to people.
Yes.
And it's I don't want to offer a Jesus of the gaps.
No,
you know, Jesus, this is the thing that you're already happy and prosperous light, and you're
but
you're,
I need your help with this.
It's going to fit in, and it's like a accessory to your life. I've become more and more conscious about that and more emphatic about the fact that Jesus is offering you a completely new life, and it's a life for life thing. Now, I mean, it's interesting, and I referred to this in the last episode. The sociologist and historian Rodney Stark points out as he looks at Christian history that it's whenever the cost seems low, the church really struggles, like it dissipates in a sense. But the times where the church has grown the most is when the cost is high. Now, I mean, Connell, you're the marketing analyst, so you can tell us why it is. Why does a big price tag actually draw? But there is a essentially what he's, and he's saying that from a purely naturalistic point of view, he's saying you can just see from history that when people looked on and they saw Christians paying an enormous cost for their faith, it drew people. It didn't drive people away from the church. It actually drew people to the church.
Well, I think what's going on there is that people are looking for a solution to how that, it's not a solution to their problems or a solution to how they feel. The way they need to do that is to plug that hole.
Yep.
Yeah.
But there's lots of ways you can plug that hole. But one of the things that I think of from a marketing perspective, and it's quite contrary to how most people would approach marketing, you listen to the market and you let the market tell you what they want, and then you create a product for the market. I think that's one of the least effective ways to market. One of the most significant ways to market is to go, I know what the problem of the market wants to solve, but I'm the expert here in bringing something to market, and I know better than what they do what they actually need. When they see it, they'll want it, but they don't know they want it.
Or need it.
So if you just get led by the market, you just end up serving up whatever they want. The market
and
is
you're
usually
competing
wrong.
With everyone else.
Exactly.
You're just blending in with everyone else.
So we're just another solution. Do we try this way? Do we try that way? But what people actually want isn't the thing that they tell you that they want.
Yeah.
So you've actually got to figure out, from a marketing perspective, what is it that you're going to bring to market? And when people see it, they're not asking for it, but they'll want it when they see it, because you actually understand how to bring a solution to them that they don't fully understand themselves. And I think that's the position the church is in, is that we can go to them with a solution that actually isn't the solution that they're looking for. But when they see it, there's something.
And let's remember too that the reason why we're even ever having the conversation, whether it's in church or not in church, or is because the Holy Spirit is at work in people's hearts. And if the Holy Spirit is at work in people's hearts, which he is, I mean, this is the thing, let's trust that, right? Mm-hmm. Jesus says, when I'm lifted up, I will draw all people to myself. When the Holy Spirit is at work in people's hearts, he is drawing their attention to a deep, deep need, not just a need for a bit more of that or a bit more, you know, like the accessories, but a deep need for a new life. Now, if they come to church and we're just offering accessories, you know, we're just offering another little solution to make your life happier than it already is or more fortunate than you already are, then we actually are not speaking to the need that the Holy Spirit is uncovering in people's lives.
So it's not really a marketing problem.
But it's the same psychology. But what you say is
the psychology.
Valid, yeah.
We shouldn't fall into the trap of thinking we've got to market. But the psychology behind it is the same. And I think we have a solution that people want, but they don't know that they want it. They don't know because the Holy Spirit is already at work in them. If you're going to call it marketing, we've got a massive advantage in the sense that the Holy Spirit's already out there laying the groundwork. And so what we've got to be able to do then is present that.
Yeah. And I think what will inevitably, disappoint, I think, it's the one who we should fear disappointing is the Holy Spirit. I mean, if we just offer more of, you know, we're trying to offer a better version of what the world is doing. We're not in sync with what the Holy Spirit is doing in people's hearts, because Holy Spirit will convict the world concerning sin, according to John chapter 16, which is more than just individual bad things. It's a whole life going the wrong way. And, you know, we need to be making it clear that what the gospel is offering is a completely new and different kind of life, right? And, you know, I mean, this is where, you know, the church, it's so important for churches to retain that sense of cost, that sense of difference and you know, holiness. I want to come back to that principle. Yeah, this is actually the principle of holiness, right? It's don't change it, you know, and bring it down to the level of because God is calling people up, right? And he's calling people to live a life that is the pursuit of a very, very high ideal. So don't bring that down to the level of people and cheapen it. And I think, again, the temptation for churches, and I see a drift of churches wanting to kind of align themselves with everything that the world is saying, because it, you know, again, coming back to the proverb, because it seems right. And it seems, the cost seems kind of mean, You know, yes. It seems kind of mean. It doesn't feel gracious, you know, that call, unless a person gives up everything that they have, they cannot be my disciple. You know, we sort of hush down that Jesus and we create a Jesus. It's the Jesus that not only comes to you, but follows you where you want to
go. Yes, that's right. You know, it's not follow me, it's follow me.
Yeah, it's the Jesus that says, not only let he who is without sin cast the first stone, but the Jesus that, but by no means will say, go and sin no more. Yeah. It's like, I'll just come and follow you as you keep going the way that you want. Yeah. That's not what the grace of God is for. The grace of God is given to turn us around and lift us up into a completely different kind of life. And so again, it's a life for life thing. And there are moments, and it struck me as I've become more sensitive to this. It struck me at times offensive Jesus actually seems, right, to sensibilities. I mean, there's the saying, unless a person hates their mother and their father and their brother, it's like, why would you say that? I mean, I know it's hyperbolic speech, but you know, if you're wanting to have some appeal, and he's talking to a society where family loyalty
is
above everything, right?
Yeah. And that's probably why he said that. Because
it's right up front. I'm telling you right now, don't even, here's the cost. I'm putting this in the window. Unless you're willing to give up all of that, you can't be my disciple. I mean, whoa. But, and this is where he goes on to say, you know, talk about counting the cost.
Yes.
For me, that the whole idea of the attractional church model is problematic. I think it doesn't diminish the fact we've still got to lower barriers and make it, you know, facilitate it so that people can come in through the doors. Mm. But we make the mistake in thinking it's a marketing exercise, but it's not, because the Holy Spirit's involved in this. But it's also, we make the mistake of thinking that holiness is unattractive to people.
Mm.
But maybe it's not. So rather than it being a bait and switch where you learn about holiness down the track, it's right up front. And people I can imagine that people aren't willing to make a step into that themselves, but they're still drawn to
it. That's right. And we're not, and I think it's important to say, we're not talking about moral superiority.
No.
Right?
Yeah.
Because holiness is the tax collector beating his chest and saying, Lord, have mercy on me, a sinner. It's that, there's difference, right? Everyone else is self-justifying and, you know, it's an aspiration. It's being filled with the Holy Spirit. It's a distinctness of desire, of longing. It's a distinctness of what you're prepared to give up. You know, it's the sinful woman who pours out the alabaster jar over Jesus, who pours out her worship, you know, because she's so overcome with forgiveness and she's giving everything to Jesus. That's what we mean.
So that's attractive. That's attractive in it. Well, attractiveness
it exudes
of the gospel.
Value. It says this is the most valuable thing above everything. This is worth giving your life for.
Matt, just before you wrap up, a couple of comments I want to make. I think it's really important for us all to recognize that when we say the church, we need to realize that's not some group of people who have got to make it happen. That's each one of us. We're all the church.
That's right.
So this is about us taking on this mantle of being holy and set apart. I think also recognizing that when we come into a corporate church setting, you know, as you say, Connell, lowering, you know, removing as many obstacles as possible at an entry level. But for those of us who have been coming along, is realize we're entering sacred space.
Mm.
You know, I think we treat our gathering sometimes is just another social outing and, oh, there's a band playing and, well, someone's going to have to give us a motivational speech. We need to realize we should be coming into our church or into our life group or whatever it might be that we're doing with a sense of wanting to meet with God and the reverence and the sacred space that creates.
Yeah.
And I think that helps raise the cost, as you were saying, Connell. That's where this is different. Something's different is happening here.
Yeah, and I think we think that
that's a problem.
That
but they love
it's a problem.
But they love. But people want that.
People see it. They're not looking for it, but they see and they go, see it. They go, "We want to be here." We may not be ready to make the decision ourselves, but there's still something attractive to be drawn around it.
Yeah. So people need to experience our utmost respect, and people will see that it's seeing value in our, you know, what we are prepared to give, in our respect for it, in our love, in our worship. that's, I think, part of seeing the difference in a society where we're trying to get away with expending as little as possible, you know, coming into an environment where you see the complete opposite, of people who are all too joyfully giving their utmost, giving their most, giving their best, sacrifice, you know, which is, again, so countercultural. It's the experience of that difference, I think, that is going to exhibit the glory of what we're actually offered in the gospel of Jesus Christ.
Thanks for joining us for this episode of Thrive Perspectives. Our hope is that these discussions will challenge you to look at life from a new perspective. You'll find all our resources at the Thrive Today website, thrivetoday.tv. If there's a topic that you'd like us to discuss, please email us. Our email is contact@thrivetoday.tv. Until next time, our prayer is that you will thrive.